Blog Talk Radio.
Of our Frat House Sports Cleanup Hitters coming to you here on May 19th from the Frat House. Certainly is starting to feel a bit more like summer here at the Frat House. And, look, let's get it straight. We're going to go through it in a couple of moments. It's starting to look a bit more like summer as you look up and down the standings in Major League Baseball, both in the American League and in the National League. And for some people like, Mike Redman, it's feeling a bit like an awkward summer as he approaches it without a job now, as he was now becomes the second manager released so far in this, young season. We're only entering our seventh week of the Major League Baseball season, and so far we've already had two managers. Mike Redman just the other day released from the Miami Marlins. Well, we're going to talk about that one a lot here, and as usual, I'm going to be talking about it with a couple of my frat boy friends here. We got Sean. Sean, how are we doing tonight?
I'm good, Frat House Mike. How are you doing?
Real good. You got in okay tonight, it looks like. So far, everything's good. Last night, I will put everybody on notice. Last night, I had a little trouble jumping on with a couple of programs myself. So, hey, you never know when Blog Talk Radio is going to rear its ugly head. Caleb, how are things down in Tennessee?
Awesome, man. Awesome.
And, you know, you got that little thing, that technology thing going on down there, right? Yeah, and you got that going, you got that going right now, right?
I sure do, sure do.
You sure do, yeah. And, see, Caleb's got this ability. The rest of us up here, up north, we're at a loss. We don't know how it works. But you know, when we do have Caleb on, we can get all of the up-to-date sports because he's got a way to look in on every single game that's going on live. And I don't know what else to do except to
tonight,
you know,
through the use of the sports machine.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it must be. It's got to be that. It's got to be Caleb's sports machine. That's what it is. Caleb, what's happening right now in Major League Baseball? I know we've got games probably that are just getting underway. So just let us know what's happening right now in Major League Baseball.
Well, nothing really. Games are about to get underway. There's nothing happening yet.
That's a hell of a machine you got there.
I know, right? It's great. I can watch all of them, and they're all on a commercial. It's great.
Look at there. Yeah, you're just getting popcorn. It's
so
awesome.
I have 8 different commercials happening right now at the same time.
Wow.
Look how far we have all come. It's great. Awesome stuff.
What do we have coming up? How about that?
All right. Well, we got the Yankees at Washington at 7:05. The Rangers at the Red Sox at 7:10. Also at 7:10, we got St. Louis in New York. And that game last night went 14 innings. That game was crazy awesome. Just want to say that. I watched that game. First off, it was long, but it was a good game. Then at 7:08, we got the Brewers and the Tigers. And at 7:10, Tampa Bay and Atlanta.
There you go. There you go. There's our lineup as we know it coming up shortly. And that all thanks to,
tonight,
right here.
Through the use of the sports machine.
Absolutely. Caleb's sports machine. That's awesome. Guys, you probably have no clue what the reference to that is, I'm sure. I don't know if any of you do. George Michaels was a, he was kind of a guy who kind of broke ground in sports broadcasting by bringing kind of wrap-up programs. He wasn't so much known for being a play-by-play guy, but more of a kind of an ESPN, Comcast Sportsnet, CNN sort of sports dude. He had a lot of mentors in the business. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, one of them is named from this Philadelphia region that'll jump at Sean. I believe one of his mentors is Howard Eskin. George Michael, of course, no longer with us, passed away quite a few years ago. Had a program, though, that ran from 1980 until like 2004, I believe, something to that effect, in syndication all across the country. I got to be honest with you, it was very, very rare on a Sunday night that I would miss George Michael's Sports Machine, as it usually came to us in our time zone, normally at about midnight, thereabouts on a Sunday night. Yeah, the George Michael's Sports Machine. If any of you out there remember the George Michael's Sports Machine, well, here's what you got to do. You got to call into us here at the Frat House Sports Cleanup Hitters, 347-826-9964, 347-826-9964. That's how you get a hold of us. If you are listening on a computer and you are Skype capable, hit the little blue Skype button, put you through to us loud and clear. Chat room's wide open. A little bit of activity going on over there. Thank you. And or if you want to hit me up on Twitter, always please encourage it at Frat House Mike. I check it constantly. All right, there you go. Let's. We were kind of joking a little bit off air online last night. There was a little bit of joking going on with the cleanup hitters here group about, oh my gosh, what are the silly, ridiculous power rankings going to be looking like come today with the Philadelphia Phils now on a 6-game winning streak? What? Where did this come from? Now, unfortunately, the power rankings that we use here, or that I guess, I mean, for all intent and purpose, I'll say officially, we use USA Today's. You can go and check. Everybody's got their own set of power rankings. Caleb's sports machine, I think, has their own, right? Doesn't your sports machine have its own set of power rankings?
Sure does.
Caleb? Yeah,
sure
exactly.
Does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you publish them. I think you publish them on Caleb on Sports, right? Caleb on Sports.com. Yeah. So everybody's got their own set of power rankings, but we here officially use USA Today, and of course USA Today came out with theirs, I guess it was yesterday, before yesterday's games. So in fact, they weren't counting in the fact that the Phils were on a 6-game winning streak, just a 5-game at that point. Well, the Phils had moved 3 points, or 3 spots, let's put it that way, from number 30th to number 27. But the biggest mover, I guess, last week was the Chicago White Sox, jumped up to 15th. They're, I think, as well on a 6-game winning streak, if I'm not mistaken.
They are.
Thank you very much. And I guess they would be going for their 7th game as well. The Phils are going for their 7th game this evening. And when you take – but the thing that I wanted to point out about the Chicago White Sox, which is really tremendous to me, you take a look at the AL Central. You've got a 4.5 difference between – the Kansas City Royals, who are right now leading the AL Central, and the Chicago White Sox, who are in 4th place, 4.5 games behind. But look at the wild card standings in that particular division. It's wild. You potentially could have two of the wild cards coming right now, if all things were, you know. And hold on, where's my buddy Nick? I need Nick in here, because Nick would say to me, now hold on there, Frat House Mike, it's early. It's early. Yes, it is still early. Starting to feel a little bit like summer, but it's still early. But look at it. You've got Kansas City leading the division. Detroit would be one of the wild card teams, and Minnesota tied for the second, you know, for a potential wild card spot. It's crazy when and Chicago White Sox only a game and a half out of the wild card. That division right now, really in the American League, appears to be the most competitive. If the power rankings point to anything at all, sometimes it just kind of points us right back to the standings, and it leads us to taking a look at the standings a little bit deeper. I mean, that's one thing I will say for the ridiculous power rankings, because I love to just berate them and say it's stupid. But anything, as we like to start out the week doing, guys, anything jumping off the screen at you, either in the power rankings or in the standings? The AL Central jumps out at me.
I would agree with that, yeah. That's probably the biggest one that would jump out for me looking at the standings for sure. But for the power rankings, I mean, it all actually, in my mind, it actually all kind of makes sense how it all falls here. So,
well, that's always a problem I have with the power rankings. That's why I always contend that it's so stupid, because really the power rankings are nothing more than just a lineup of everything we already know. And if you're even a minutely astute student of sports, you can figure out on your own. Basically, all you're doing is just lining the teams up and going, well, who's leading and who sucks? Basically, that's what it comes down to. Let's get it straight.
That's really how it all comes down to, yeah. I mean,
yeah,
now they
exactly.
all say, hey, we all take into account the whatever type of thing that they use for, you know, the pitching and all the batting and blah, blah, blah. No, it's just, hey, I think they're right now better than so-and-so, and that's basically the gist of it. That's it.
It's a snapshot. It's a camera shot
basically,
is what it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
really is. And the one thing, I've been thinking about this for a couple weeks now, and to me, all the power rankings seems like the popular list in high school where you see a nerdy kid sitting at a computer like, oh, this guy hangs out with everyone. Like, he's got to be popular. And then they just, like, make a completely imaginary list of stuff that people probably already know and isn't really that important. That's the comparison I like to make to it.
You mean they do that kind of stuff?
I mean... I remember on old cartoons they used to do it, so I don't know, particularly my high school, but.
Well, congratulations
but anyway.
To Caleb. Congratulations to Caleb, because he just got his cap and gown pictures taken the other day, right, Caleb?
Yes, sir. Sure enough, I graduated on Sunday, so I'm happy that I'm done. Good stuff, so.
And you can attest to whether anything that Sean just said there is true or false, right? Do they keep lists like that in the library?
No. Not at least in mine. So all definitely
right.
not. Definitely not.
Well, we wouldn't want to hear that anyhow, because that's a form of bullying, in my opinion. That's the way I put it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But, yeah, there you go. Now, look, you got two of us here who sit on the panel who are Philadelphia Phils fans. I think we're realistic Philadelphia Phils fans, though. Sean and I are. But nonetheless, we wear the red and white. And 17 and 23 right now, Sean, 6.5 games out of first place. And as we just pointed out, one of the hottest teams in baseball in the past week. This is all just nothing more than a figment of the schedule, right?
I believe so.
I mean
hey, we're not in last place, so I'm not going to complain.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
As our fellow frat boy Nick would say,
it's early.
It's early.
It's early, yes.
We
hope Nick is listening.
And although
because
the Phillies...
we've invoked Nick already three times now in 15 minutes.
But yeah, even though they're not in last place, I mean, this could just be a result of their schedule. Maybe an easy couple of series, knock off a few wins. And then, I mean, this weekend they're going up against the Nationals, so
yep.
I highly doubt they're going to keep a win streak going into this weekend, especially
okay.
facing them.
Okay, but let me throw a scenario at you for a moment. Now, you know, it's funny. I want to bring up two points. The first point is this. And if excuse me, if people say, Fred House, Mike, you're being a homer because you're spending way too much time talking about the Phils. All right, I apologize. Indulge me for a moment. But you can't get away from talking about one of the hottest teams in baseball in a microcosm, in a snapshot, as we're talking about when it comes to power rankings. You mentioned the Philadelphia Phils are in fourth place. All right, let's put it in perspective. They're a half game in front of the Miami Marlins, who just fired their manager, and we're going to talk about that at length here in a couple of moments. They're only a half game in front of the Miami Marlins. They've got three more games starting tonight against the Colorado Rockies, who are positively horrible themselves, playing 371 ball, 13 and 22. Now, let's just say for a moment, Sean, I'm going to pose a scenario to you. Let's just say for a moment that they go to Washington this coming weekend, and I believe they have to play in Washington. I think they're on the road. They're going to play a three-game set in Washington Friday to Sunday. And let's just say for a moment they don't sweep Washington, but they win two out of three. Does your tune change at that point?
I think so. I mean, with a hot hand like Bryce Harper in the Washington lineup and how they've risen from lower in the division up to now second place and only a game behind the Mets, if the Phillies can put up a contest against them and take this series this weekend, I don't know. Maybe the Phillies are up for a little bit of talk. You know, maybe they figured something out that they didn't at the beginning of the season.
Ryan Howard, I think, is now up around, does anybody have the numbers? I don't have them right in front of me, but I want to say he's up, I guess, approaching 250 batting average. I think he's on the board right now for potentially one of the home run leaders. He's obviously not 1, 2, 3, but he might be in the top six right now in the National League. Howard seems to be coming around, perhaps maybe moving some roster pieces around. Franco being added to the lineup, I don't know. You know, any positives here? I guess I don't know. I'm not sure. It's difficult to say. You know, we're going to talk about managers too, and whether managers make any difference at all. We're going to talk about that one here when we get into talking about the Marlins. But I don't know, Caleb. I know you're an outsider looking in, but I know you follow the entire league. Any thoughts on what's happening in Philadelphia? Is this just a figment of the you know, a manifestation of the schedule?
Well, yeah, in a sense, I think it might be. But, I mean, if they can beat Washington, then I think that it could possibly prolong it into a season run. But, again, it's early. I'm going to pull a Nick. I'm sorry, but it's really early. But
yeah, we're really throwing Nick under the bus.
Listen, it's homage.
No.
It's homage.
But I agree with him. It's really early to think. I mean, or to even say that, hey, somebody's going to absolutely be horrible or somebody's totally going to win it all, because it's super early. It's still early. We're only 2 months in, not even that. And so we still have a lot of baseball left. Mm-hmm. So with Philadelphia, I mean, yeah, I think that they're not going to be one of the worst teams. Well, let me rephrase that. I think they are going to be one of the worst teams, but they're not going to be the absolute worst. So, I don't know. I think it's just kind of right now they got some easier matchups and they got some wins happening, but I don't know how long this will actually hold out.
Well, I don't think they're going to be the worst in the majors, and I don't think they're even going to be the worst in the National League. I don't know who's going to shake down as being the worst in the National League. My bet at the moment would probably be on the Brewers.
That's who I was thinking. Yep.
Yeah. But we'll see where it goes at this moment. But I'm going to tell you right now, let's just say for a moment, you know, as I pointed out, we got a four-game setup right now against the Rockies out in Colorado. And the Colorado Rockies are abysmal. They're in the basement right now in the West. So let's just say for a moment we split with them. We win one more. Even if we win two more, we take the series. And then we go to Washington and we take two out of three there. I think you're going to get some people sitting up and taking notice. I also would think that at that point, something's going on that's going to be making the news that's going to be taking all of the highlights here in the Philadelphia region away from the Philadelphia Eagles and putting it right back on the shoulders of the Philadelphia Phils, because something will be happening. In other words, you're going to get a Franco breaking out, or Utley suddenly going to explode. You know, all of this is going to have to happen, in other words, like I'm saying, like in the next 5 days or so. But we'll see how it goes. All right. Now, what has happened in the past couple of days? And we got to get into this because in some respects, it's amusing. In some respects, it's, I guess, predictable. In some respects, it's kind of sad. And that is what just took place down in Miami with the Miami Marlins. There had been a lot of talk about it. And in fact, before we saw the release of the Brewers manager a couple of weeks ago in favor of, who did they put in there? Craig Counsell, right? Before we saw that one, there was a lot of talk that, in fact, Mike Redmond might be the very first manager released. And, in fact, we saw that it turned out to be the Brewers instead. But Jeffrey Luria wasn't too far behind. Somewhat surprisingly, released Mike Redmond, I guess it was 2-3 days ago. And then the announcement came down yesterday that Redmond had been replaced by general manager Dan Jennings. And as I pointed out in my notes, we're not talking about Chewy Jennings. We're talking about Dan Jennings. And there's a lot of people out there going, Chewy who? Well, Chewy Jennings just happened to be, he's a Hall of Famer who was the Detroit Tigers manager from 1907 to 1920. He had 1,131 wins and had absolutely no experience whatsoever or background in being a manager. None. Very similar to Dan Jennings, but when he came in, you can see he's a Hall of Famer, Huey Jennings. We're not talking about that kind of a Jennings. Dan Jennings is a general manager. He's a general manager not dissimilar to, I don't know if Sean can help me out with the name of our buddy that ultimately ended up over there in Houston, who helped build the 2008 Phils. Ultimately, it was the general manager here, and then we had to release him, and he ended up over with Houston. I can picture his face, darn it all. But anyhow, he started out with the Philadelphia Phils as a ticket collector, believe it or not, with the team way back when he was a youngster, and worked himself up to general manager of the Philadelphia Phils. Well, that's the Dan Jennings story down in Miami. Let's get it straight. Dan Jennings is a friend of Jeffrey Luria. The last time he managed, and did he have any Major League Baseball experience? Apparently so. He spent about 2 weeks one time, way back in the late 70s, early 80s, with a minor league franchise team of the New York Yankees. They cut him after less than 2 weeks. He then went on later on, and he managed a high school team in the 80s. That was 30 years ago. That's the last time he was a manager. He's now the manager of one of 30 franchises in Major League Baseball. There are a lot of people, gentlemen, that are scratching their heads over this one. A couple of points I want to bring out that I sent over in some articles, and I'm sure you guys are probably already aware of, but let me make the audience aware of as well. Right now, currently on the Miami Marlins payroll, Ozzie Guillen, everybody remember him? The loudmouth, the foulmouth, who sat there before Mike Redmond. Everybody said it was going to be a disaster. It was kind of like Bobby Valentine going to the Boston Red Sox. Everybody said that was going to be a disaster before it ever happened. But they did it anyhow, and it lasted for about a year. Well, Ozzie Guillen was the same exact situation. Down in Miami, sent him down there, and he became the manager. He is still on the payroll. Jeffrey Luria is still paying him up until the end of this current season. Jeffrey Luria will pay Mike Redmond, because they just granted him an extension before this season began, until 2017. So Jeffrey Luria will pay Mike Redmond for the next two seasons. And now, He's got a general manager on the payroll, Dan Jennings, who he, I guess, is double-dipping and getting managerial payroll out of. So we've got three managers on the payroll. I frankly think it's brilliant on Loria's part. Hey, if you can't make it work with one, why don't you just pay three? What do you think, guys? Any thoughts on this nonsense?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, for me, if I was Redmond, I would be sitting here saying, well, I just got fired, but I'm going to get paid for two more seasons for doing absolutely nothing. Yeah, my life's pretty great right now. But this hire, I don't know how I feel about it. I'm kind of up in the air. I think it could be really cool if he does well, because then, you know, you could say that, hey, it's kind of a cool little storyline and, you know, all that. But in a baseball sense, I'm not a fan of the hire because he has no experience whatsoever except for 30 years ago as a high school coach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, he's been around the game for a long time. I get that. You know, he knows the players. You know, he knows them because he's, you know, really had to sign them all and all that stuff. But I just question his baseball IQ in how he reacts to game time situations and what he does with lineups, with all the substitutions, with all of that stuff, because there's a lot that all has to try to go into making a good, solid lineup and to winning a baseball game. You've got to do little things as a manager to help out all of your guys. And so there's a lot to really learn, unless he already had some sort of an input, which I highly, highly, highly doubt that was happening, but who knows? So we'll just have to see how this kind of happens. But I'm just kind of shocked by the Marlins after signing Redmond for another two seasons, and then you give him a month and a half, and then he's completely gone. So
yeah, and as our other panelist here, Nick, would say, why would you do that? Because look, let's get it straight. It's early.
Exactly.
It's early. Yeah.
Exactly.
We're on a count right now, Nick, on how many times we can say it's early in this program.
I feel like we all got to start saying it like in tandem.
Oh, exactly.
Too. Like we
exactly.
all got to. We all three of us have to say it at the same time. Otherwise, it's not going
to
count.
Well, yeah, we'll have to figure out a way. We'll have to see if we get that one coordinated. Sean, let's go back to this though, because I got to. You know, I don't know how much research you've done on it, but here, Dan Jennings took over as the general manager only in 2013. Okay, 2013. Now, he's elevated, if you want to call it elevated. I don't know if going from general manager to manager is an elevation or whether that's a lateral movement or if that's considered a movement down. In my book, on the flow chart, that's actually a demotion. It seems to me a general manager is above a manager, but that's just my thinking. 2013, with all due respect, this guy doesn't even have a track record as a general manager. I mean, I haven't seen where this team, the Miami Marlins, had done anything that's so miraculous when it comes to personnel, with the exception of signing a $325 million contract with Giancarlo Stanton. That's
something like that, yeah.
Yeah, that's the extent of it. I mean, for God's sake, this guy's got no track record as a general manager. You know, Caleb's bringing up the point, well, it would be nice. It certainly would be a fairy tale, Cinderella type of story if all of a sudden this guy busted out and, oh, look at him. He took the Miami Marlins to, the National League championship. But I don't see where the guy's got any. I mean, you know, it's the old, I love to use the old line, you know, it's the old fairy tale. It's, the emperor's got no clothes. Let's get it straight. This guy's got no credibility, yes? No? What? Go ahead, Sean.
I mean, I'd have to agree with you on that one. I mean, the only thing that I can come up with to explain what happened in Miami's office is that it's a stunt by Loria to keep money in his pocket because he's already paying this guy, so he doesn't have to add another name onto his payroll. And the other thing is, like, I don't understand why you would make the decision to sign a manager in Redmond for 2 years and then release him less than 40 games into the season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have no idea why you would make a decision like that this early on. So,
well, and
unless
then it leads
can...
you, it leads you to wonder if that perhaps wasn't Loria's decision, but could that have been Jennings' decision? In which case now, Loria is stepping in and saying, "You moron, that was a horrible decision. I don't know why I ever listened to you. By the way, would you manage this team?"
Quite possibly. Maybe he's paying him back. He's like, "Hey, you made this mistake, so why don't you try to fix it yourself? Don't find someone else to fix it. Fix it yourself." I don't know. I really can't make any sense of the decision.
Now, a lot of people are surmising that this is a cost-cutting thing on the part of Jeffrey Loria. I was listening in on one sports talk program the other night, and a couple of the talking heads were actually saying on this one sports talk program, I'm not even going to mention the name, that, well, this is because Loria is cheap. I frankly don't think it's Loria is cheap, because when you're dropping... When you're dropping
$325 million.
Thank you very much. When you're
dropping the entire salary,
you're dropping the entire payroll of the whole team on one guy. That's not cheap, okay? So I don't think the guy is cheap. I think the guy is...
uneducated.
Well, or misinformed, you know.
Misinformed might be a better word.
Poorly advised? Yeah, poorly advised. How about that?
Yep.
Would he be
That's
poorly
a good
advised?
One. Yes,
right.
Yes.
I mean, you know, perhaps this guy, or as I have contended, and I am on record here at Frat House Sports, because let's not forget, while this program's only been going for 10 weeks, Frat House Sports has been around for almost 4 years, and I have absolutely no love for Jeffrey Loria. I have ripped that man apart every chance I could. In the past 4 years, I think he is the biggest scumbag owner in all of sports, in my personal opinion. All right, now we've got a caller on the line. We got Rick on deck, but I want to go to this real quick, guys. So Rick on deck, hold on there because I'm going to get you on with us. But I want to jump over because this is only about 30 seconds. I want to jump over to Tim Kirchen from. The other night on with Keith Olbermann. And Tim Kirchen from ESPN is talking about this whole move, as we're talking about right now, and what Miami did. Well, this was Tim Kirchen's take on it, and we can talk about it, and we'll get Rick on deck in as well to give us his thoughts. This was Tim Kirchen.
Explanation for all the weird things that go on with this team?
Well, Jeffrey Loria, the owner, has been there for most of this,
mm-hmm.
and as you know, Keith, they've had 13 managers in their history. None of them has worked more than 4 years. None of them has won as many as 300 games. Jeffrey Loria tends to change managers very quickly, and if he doesn't like the way things are going, he makes a change very fast. And he's had some odd hirings, some of which have actually worked out over the years. But I've got people all over baseball wondering if this is going to work out. A manager texted me today with two words. Dan Jennings ?
Mm-hmm.
After. That's the text I got, which kind of said the whole thing. And this guy later texted me, "I can't wait to see how this works out."
Now, I thought perhaps maybe Tim Kirchen was going to tell us that the two words that were texted to him came from, our frat boy Nick saying, "It's early." I thought perhaps maybe that's what Tim Kirchen was going to tell us, but that's not what it was. Where's Nick? We got to have Nick call in. Anyhow, listen, we got Rick on deck here, and I think Rick on deck is going to tell us. Let's find out. I think Rick on deck is going to tell us that it's early. Rick, what do you got to tell us?
Hey, I am getting such a kick out of the it's early tonight. I've laughed every time I've heard it after the first time tonight. It's great. Just hi to Frat House Mike and Caleb and Sean. You guys are again providing a really cool perspective on this. Just wanted to chime in on the Florida Marlins. Loria, of course, is the mastermind behind dismantling a championship team, which I have never ever seen done before, I don't think, in baseball, where, you know, you have a team and then it's just a fire sale where it's like, get rid of everybody. So,
well, let's not forget he did that. Let's not forget he did it in Montreal before he came down here and did it in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, that gives you some initial perspective on where I fall with Loria. He's just one of those owners. I would hate to be a fan of the Florida Marlins because I just think that he makes too many crazy moves. The one thing that I have to say that, and maybe it is a, you know, a quick trigger because he fired Redmond, 20-some games into the season. But the fact of the matter is you mentioned that he signed Giancarlo Stanton to a huge contract. But look at the free agents they signed as well. Dan Heron and Matt Latos, pitchers. Dee Gordon, Mike Morse, and Martin Prada. I mean, these were guys that were coming in, and basically Loria sold his fans a bill of goods that this team's going to compete. Well, right now they're competing with the Phillies for the bottom of the division.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, somebody's going to be the fall guy, and it just happened to be Redmond. But the appointment of Jennings, that's just another one of Loria's crazy moves.
Rick, this is no different, though, than what we saw Loria do, as you insinuated there. This is no different than what we saw Loria do the season that they opened up that brand-new ballpark. When he went out in the offseason, in free agency, he bought up every high-playing player he could possibly get his hands on, brought him down there, and within 1 year, he jettisoned them all to a different team.
Right, and you brought up the point, because coinciding with that opening of the new ballpark was bringing Ozzie Guillen in as the manager, which that was just a circus. I mean, that was incredibly... you know, I understand the Latin connection and trying to get that connection, you know, and getting Latin fans to the ballpark. But, again, it's kind of like you're not really thinking it all the way through. I mean, you're thinking, you know, again, I think he does a lot of knee-jerk type of decisions and thinking in his mind. He doesn't think it all the way through and what really could possibly happen because – you know, Ozzie Guillen, when he was with Chicago, basically sowed a lot of his oats and, you know, provided us with a lot of entertainment. And to think that was going to, you know, be any different in Florida, I don't know what Laurie was thinking of. But then again, I don't think many of us know what he's thinking of at any point.
I frankly don't know. There's a lot about the man, and I think a lot of it with me goes back to his days, as I point out, with the Montreal Expos, where I just don't trust him. Now, everybody knows, and we at this point, I think perhaps maybe what the beauty is this. We don't know what his relationship is with Rob Manfred. But we do know that he and Bud Selig were very, very close. Bud Selig and him were close when he was the owner up at the Montreal Expos. Bud Selig, in fact, loaned him. Major League Baseball extended to him something like a $50 million loan, and it came from Major League Baseball that was approved by Bud Selig in order for him then to parlay the money that he got from Montreal and then go and buy the Miami Marlins. It was a disgraceful, disgusting period, in my opinion, of ownership transfer. And franchise demise that we saw that went on there. And what's crazy is that one of the topics that we're going to be bringing up here later in the show is it possible that Tampa Bay might actually move and become the next Montreal Expos? Because that's the talk. Montreal apparently is meeting with Rob Manfred about that very possibility. So it's a crazy situation, but you know, when you think about it, if in fact another team ends up in Montreal, why couldn't that team have continued to be the team that sits down in Miami. Why couldn't it have been that team?
Yeah.
I don't know. Any thoughts?
I mean, first of all, I think it was, you know, a shame that baseball left Montreal. Not that it's, you know, I can remember Phillies games against Montreal and the broadcasting was horrible from Montreal. But the fact of the matter is when any, you know, city loses a team and you figure that at the time that was the, you know, the one Canadian team that was there before the Blue Jays came into existence. You know, it's a shame to see an area lose a team, but in the case of Florida, I'm not sure that they can support. It doesn't seem like they support one team, let alone two. So I think that, you know, a move might be imminent.
I'm just curious. It's kind of like Atlanta. What sport does Florida support?
Very true. They don't. Too many people out on the beach, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, look, let's go to NFL. I mean, there's the pink elephant in the room, right? Right? And they don't even support the NFL, Florida,
Dolphins,
you know,
yeah.
Florida folks. So, I mean, you know, unless the Miami Dolphins are winning and they got a coach named Don Shula and it's the 1970s, the Miami Dolphins are completely insignificant. I mean, let's get it straight. Real quick, and I'll keep you online for a moment because I like your historical perspective that you bring to things here, Rick, because I want to get into this for a moment. Talking about managers, because we just got done talking about Dan Jennings, and he just got elevated, and we've heard, well, hey, I don't know, maybe Jeffrey Luria is some visionary. Maybe he's some crazy, whacked-out, mad scientist. Maybe he's, I don't know, maybe he's the next Chip Kelly of things, and he's going to bring a guy in that has absolutely no experience and turn him into the next, New York Yankees sort of character manager. 691 managers, believe it or not, folks. Yes, I got the number. 691 managers of Major League Baseball franchises in the history of Major League Baseball, 691, count it, 22 only in the Hall of Fame, only 22. People like Sparky Anderson, Bobby Cox, Leo DeRocha, Whitey Herzog, Tony La Russa, Tommy Lasorda, Connie Mack, Casey Stengel, Joe Torre. Those are the names that we would recognize. Earl Weaver, we would recognize. Those are the names that we would recognize. That's it. Can we put Dan Jennings in the class?
Certainly. Why not?
Oh, hey, my goodness.
So here's
where I wanted to go.
Dan's got to win his first game first.
Well, yeah, well, and they had a chance of doing that last night and didn't go very well. I mean, they actually were leading that game, if I'm not mistaken, in his debut, but didn't go very well. Here's where I want to go with this real quick. Of active managers right now, okay? That is, we've got, 30 teams in Major League Baseball. Of active managers right now, can we name two or three or four, is it possible to even name four, that might make this list? And, gentlemen, look at this list. I mean, I'm trying to think. Who's the most recent on this list? I guess it would be La Russa, right? Would it be La Russa? It's got to be La Russa.
Yeah, La Russa and Torre.
Torre went in and year inducted 2014. Actually, he and La Russa went in the same year.
Yep.
Whitey Herzog went in 2010. When did Earl Weaver go in? 1996.
Yeah.
I mean, Bobby Cox went in 2014. Holy smokes, are you trying to tell me we had three go in the same year? We had three managers go in the same year. Well, I guess that speaks to that era, doesn't it? Doesn't that speak to that era?
Mm-hmm. It does, yeah, for sure.
Wow, wow, wow. Really good baseball we saw back then, I'll tell you. Really good baseball. When you got three going in from the exact same era, we saw them all go up against each other. Is there anybody right now that would jump off the platter at you and say, oh, yeah, this guy has got to get into the Hall of Fame, wouldn't you think? Anybody jumping off the plate at you?
If there's a if that's a toss-up, Bruce Bochy is a lock for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he
I
was.
I think, anyway.
Yeah,
I mean,
he was one of mine.
Three championships in 5 years.
Well, he's my – yeah, he would be my number one.
Yeah. I think after that, it's kind of a crapshoot myself. You know, I think Bochy is a you know, he's going to be the guy compared that all the other managers are compared against, you know, in this era. And I think it's going to be hard for anybody to certainly top what he's done, but even get close. A lot of the managers right now are either younger or, you know, really haven't put themselves over the top by winning a championship, because I think that that's almost a given that you have to win a championship in order to get in. I don't think, especially given the numbers that you gave, Frant House, my 22 out of 600 plus, that's not boding well for anybody who hasn't won at all. So I think I do have a couple other names, but I'd like to get, you know, I'd like to give your frat house guys there a chance to speak in as well.
The interesting thing, though, that I would just throw in before we bring in Sean and we bring in Caleb here, the interesting thing that I would point out is that a lot of the names of the managers that are on the Hall of Fame list are what I would refer to, of the 22, are what I would refer to as being from the quote-unquote modern era. So in other words, you're not seeing a lot from, you know, that, you know, some of those guys that I love to dredge up for my Today in Sports over on our Frat House Sports Facebook page. You know, I love to go in and find some manager from 1908 who did something that nobody ever thought of, or he was the innovator of. You don't see too many. You know, Connie Mack is on there. John McGraw, 1937, is on there. Wilbert Robinson. I don't even know who Wilbert, with all due respect, I don't know who Wilbert Robinson is. You know, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, for gosh sake, about 16 years before I was even born. So I don't know who he is, but some of them that are on this list are from the modern era. So I would say that. So I guess maybe in recent times, more room is being made for manager recognition. I don't know. Guys, jump in. Sean, Caleb, go ahead. Jump in on us.
Well, I had Bochy. He was my number one. And then I had Terry Francona as the second one, only because he's got a couple of championship rings. You know, and there's really nobody else that's really jumping out at me that's like, this guy is a lock, or even a possibility. I really don't think anyone else other than my two guys. So,
what you thinking, Sean?
I mean, I'd have to mostly agree with Caleb on that. The one that really stood out, as Rick pointed out, Bruce Bochy, I think it's definitely at least going to be on a ballot once his career is over. I think he'll be on a ballot for the Hall of Fame.
I'll throw one more name. Go ahead.
Maybe Mike Socha. I mean, he's got one World Series under his belt, not so much more, but a fairly successful Angels team over the past couple of years. I don't know. Maybe. Just a name. Because there really isn't that many other names out there.
I'll throw one name out there for consideration. Under circumstances. We had on Brian McCray last Tuesday night here on Cleanup Hitters, former Kansas City Royals. We had on Jeff Montgomery, former Kansas City Royal pitcher, on Thursday night on our Frat House Sports Show. One of them said, I forget which one, I want to say it was Brian, when I asked about the Chicago Cubs, said the Chicago Cubs absolutely will win a World Series, not this year, but look for them in a year or two, and they will win multiple. If Joe Maddon takes the Cubs to a World Series, he goes to the Hall of Fame.
Trout,
I would agree with that.
Mikey read my mind. He's on my list.
Yep. But it's under condition. It's under condition.
Yes, definitely under conditions, and I agree with you. I think that if Maddon takes the Cubs to the World Series and wins, he will definitely be under heavy consideration for the Hall of Fame. Because he did in Tampa Bay, I mean, he took teams that had no business, really competing with the Yankees and the Red Sox and winning divisions there and actually getting to the World Series, obviously, but not winning. So mm-hmm. I think that his work in Tampa Bay certainly provides the foundation for his resume. But if he takes the Cubs and breaks, you know, their 80-some-odd year losing streak, I think he would be definitely better than 50-50 shot at making it.
Yep. Absolutely. I think they're the only two at this moment right now. Now, you know, we'll wait and see how things progress. I mean, on one list that I've seen that I think came from, where did this come from? It came from CBS Sports. On one list, I'm seeing Mike Matheny mentioned. I'm seeing Joe Girardi mentioned. I guess if Joe Girardi were to win a World Series this year with the gang of aging beat up has-beens that he's got right now, I guess you'd have to give him some consideration. I mean, seriously. But I really think I think a manager that can do it on more than one team, I think that to me holds a lot of weight. If you can do it on more than one team, if you do it on simply one team, well, all right. Some of it might be internal. It's the way the team is structured. It's the way management is. But if you can go from one team to another, particularly when you're going from Tampa Bay to Chicago Cubs and you rebuild the Cubs, oh, gosh, are you kidding me? Listen, that guy should have the biggest managerial plaque in all of Hall of Fame, seriously. Because, you know, those poor people out there, serious. I mean, come on. But
he'd be a legend in our time.
Well, he'd be a legend forever, I think. In Chicago, they'd have a statue of him on every corner. Are you kidding? Yep. All right. Too much fun here. Rick on Deck, thanks for joining us again. It's you.
Pleasure.
Usually do. We love having you on. So make sure you're back here
with us
again next.
All
week.
Right.
All right. Thanks. All right, there we go. All right, let's. We got a little bit more than about a half hour here. 347-826-9964. Please, folks, jump in with us as Rick on Deck just did there. And if you do it enough, you actually get your own nickname, like Rick just did. Yeah, how do you like that? See, if you do it enough, we're gonna tag you. 347-826-9964. That's how you can get in with Frat House Sports Cleanup Hitters. If you're listening on a computer, hit the little Skype button. Get in the chat room. Do that. Leave us a message there. Hit me up on Twitter. Oh, I got notifications over there. I better check those out here in a moment. There might be somebody trying to tell us something. I want to get into a couple other things here. Oh, boy. You know, one of the things I want to get back to. I'm going to move things up on the agenda here, guys, because I don't want to run out of time. Because we got into one of them last week. And I want to get into some comments here from Pete Rose. All right. And because I got some clips here and I want to play these. And I want to get everybody's comments on them. One of the clips that I played last week, and I'm not going to play it again. One of the clips that I played from Pete Rose. Pete Rose he's now an analyst over on Fox Sports. And, I got to tell you, guys, I don't know. Have either of you had a chance to hear him live? Because he is phenomenal. I mean, if he's never had training, he is absolutely awesome. Have either of you guys heard him live?
No. I haven't, no.
Okay. Well, you got to take a moment because Pete Rose is just a natural communicator. He is awesome. And like I said, to the best of my knowledge, I don't know if he's really ever had any real training in broadcasting. And he's phenomenal. Now, I want you got to remember, the guy's 74 years old, okay? Now, one of these clips I wanted to bring last week. We got into one last week where he actually made the claim that he would die as the Hit King, and I was asking, who did I have on with me last week? I had Nick, and I had Sean, right? And we were talking a little bit about, you know, was he being arrogant, et cetera. Okay, all right. This is from the same time. Now, I've got two here from the same time, and then I got one that I know is going to make Caleb real happy because he talks a little bit about Andrew McCutchen. But let me get into this one. He talks a little bit about Alex Rodriguez here, and I want to get everybody's real quick impression on Pete Rose. Now, remember that we're talking about Pete Rose here, who has been banned from baseball for how long? 30-plus years? Okay. This is Pete Rose talking about Alex Rodriguez.
Yankees are playing. They're winning right now. They got A-Rod's back, of course. Mm-hmm. He just hit his 661st home run passing Willie Mays. A lot of debate about that. Mm-hmm. How should baseball or the Yankees celebrate that?
Well, I don't know if they should celebrate it. I never did quite understand anybody that's going to celebrate something that you become number four.
That's true.
I mean, he's number four on the list.
Yeah.
I mean, Babe Ruth's number three. Hank Aaron's number two.
Yeah.
Barry Bonds is number one. A-Rod, nice going. You hit a lot of home runs, but you're number four. I don't want to celebrate being number four. That's like celebrating losing the World Series.
That's true. I guess they do give you a ring for the NL or AL pennant.
However, if they sign a contract where they owe him whatever they owe him, they got to live up to the contract. And I'm not in on that contract, but if they say if he gets 661, they're going to pay him $5 million. If it's in the contract, I'm not a lawyer, but it sounds like he should get his money.
All right. Any thoughts from either of you on to me, I'm going to be honest with you. Now, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just being an A-Rod hater. Maybe I want to read into that's a backhanded compliment. But is anybody reading in there that's a backhanded compliment? Or is it just
I
early?
I am.
Or is it just early? Perhaps it's just early.
This is a little too early to tell. I think a backhanded compliment is kind of the perfect way to explain what he's saying, because it is a feat. I mean, you're, you know, moving up in the ranks of hitting home runs, passing legends. I mean, but I would have to agree with him that you're still not you're still not like in the top three. Like, you're number four. You're not number one. And, I mean, I think there's really room to celebrate. Like, I mean, I know, you know, we all hate Barry Bonds. But in the MLB's eyes, he is the home run king. And he's gotten to that point, and he can celebrate that because he's the home run king now. So I think calling it a backhanded compliment really is fitting. Because it's a great feat, but at the same time, you're only number four.
In fact, I got to be honest with you, I kind of laughed when he said it. I mean, because when you think about it, there's something so logical about him, and there's something so simplistic about the way that Pete Rose actually comes out and says it. I mean, well, why are we sitting around celebrating something that's number four? I mean, you know, in the infinite simplistic wisdom of it, give that some thought and let that settle in there, guys, because that makes a heck of a lot of sense. Now, at the same time, he comes back and says, well, look, now, if the Yankees are contractually obligated, well, then, you know, you pay the man the money. Well, which I agree with. But at the same time, we've all, I think, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think I've heard just about everybody here on the panel, including Nick, say, well, you know, why in the world did the Yankees ever agree to this? Nobody can seem to put their finger on it. It's the stupidest kind of thing in the world when you think about it. Why would you – six – are you kidding me? That much? Six – what was it? How much are they planning on paying them? Is it $6 million?
$6 million.
$6 million to get to that level. And I mean, that we're not even talking about being number one. We're talking $6 million to get to that. I mean, you know, so I think just about everybody has indicated that. So I don't know. To me, that's kind of the way it came across to me. I kind of liked it because in some respects I kind of agreed with Rose. Well, yeah, I think A-Rod probably should be paid it. But at the same time, isn't it really all to do about nothing? Huh? I don't know. Any real quick thoughts, Caleb?
Yeah, I mean, the way that he kind of worded it was kind of funny in a sense. I mean, he kind of bashed him, but he also kind of praised him in the same sense. Kind of like you were saying a second ago, but, you know, he's actually right. He's right on. I mean, nobody celebrates anything for being fourth. Yeah, you're always going to be, hey, awesome job for passing up, you know, a legend. But unless you're number one, you know, there's no real sense in celebrating too much. You know, it's really good to, you know, celebrate an accomplishment for a, you know, for a day or so, but you've got to get right back at it. You've got to go and try to beat whoever's in first place. Now, mm-hmm. I don't think that he's ever going to reach there because I just don't think he has the time to. I just don't.
Yeah, I might agree. I don't know if the age. I think the age is going to catch up with him. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the age will get him. I do. But I mean, I think Rose was right on.
I think just to throw in one last bit of perspective here, it's almost like the Olympics, because I mean, got the top athletes in the world running at these events. And when you get number four, it's like, well, congratulations, you're the fourth fastest person in the world. But you're not getting any recognition for it. You're not up on that podium receiving your medal. So it's kind of that situation where it's like, yeah, like you're number four in all-time home runs, but you're still number four. So your name's not at the top of the list being talked about all the time.
But he gets a $6 million check signed by a Steinbrenner.
And there is that. So, I mean, while we're sitting here talking about, you know, he's not getting any recognition for this, he's laughing his way to the bank, cashing a $6 million check.
Exactly right. All right, let me get to this next one. This comes from the same initial conversation where Pete says there's a lot of bad teams in Major League Baseball right now. There's a lot of bad teams. Now, I want you to think about that for a moment because we just looked at the standings. And, yeah, initially in the beginning of the season, it didn't look great. But as I just pointed out, the American League Central is incredibly competitive. And even while the really bad teams are bad, let's get it straight. They're not completely out of it yet. We're not looking at 200 baseball like we were a couple of weeks ago. I mean, there are teams now starting to reach the 350 mark and what have you. But I want to note, I want to ask when we're done listening to this one, whether anybody picks up a little bit of a contradiction in what Rose says. And I'm going to give him a pass for a moment because perhaps it was the first time he was on the air broadcasting live on Fox Sports. But I don't know. I get a little bit of a contradiction in this one. He says there's a lot of bad teams in baseball.
What do you think of the state of baseball right now?
Well, I think it's great. I mean, it's great for the players. They're making millions and millions of dollars, and it seems like there's a lot of sellouts, and there's a lot of great players playing today. I mean, I take my hat off. There's a lot of really good players. There's a lot of bad teams, I must say, in baseball today. And there's a handful
bad teams, what do you
of
mean?
Bad teams.
Okay.
Teams have no chance going to the World Series.
All right.
And that's a sad situation to be in as a player.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're on a team that has no chance of going anywhere, you start playing individual for yourself, worrying about your own stats. And if you're a baseball player, your stats should dictate what the team does. That's why I was so proud to be a member of the Big Red Machine.
Right.
Because you walk in our clubhouse, this guy's leading the league in home runs, this guy's leading the league in stolen bases, I'm leading the league in hits, this guy's leading the league in batting.
Right.
I mean, it was a fun clubhouse.
Right.
Now you walk in this clubhouse, this guy's hitting 210, this guy's hitting 220. Mum's the word. No one's even talking.
Wow.
And the object of the game is to win the game.
Right.
That's why you play sports. That's why they have the million-dollar scoreboards. Somebody's got to lose. Somebody's got to win. I want to win. Losing sucks.
It does. And Herm Edwards said it best. You play to win the game.
All right. Anybody picking up any contradiction in anything Mr. Rose said there? God knows. Listen, I love the guy, but I can pick out probably two or three. Anybody picking up a contradiction in anything there?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. You know, he said that the game is really great right now, but then he says, oh, no, it's not, because there's a lot of really bad teams. Now, I would actually agree in some sense that, yeah, the game is really good right now, but then again, there's some pretty bad teams. There are, and, I mean, it's kind of a fine line of how you want to look at it, but, you know, baseball is still, well, for now, our nation's pastime, but it has lost some interest.
It's early, though. It's early, Caleb.
Yeah, it is early, so we just have to watch it. So, but, oh, man, that's funny.
It's never going to end.
Man.
Well, I'm just doing what Sean recommended, and we're just going to drop it in there now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean.
Why not?
I mean.
Exactly.
So, but I think there are a lot of really good players right now. You know, and that's an evident, and they're fun to watch. They just are. You know, the pitchers are dominant. Kershaw, he's fun to watch. He's fun to watch because he makes everyone look like fools, and it's funny, and it's fun to watch him. And then you have hitters that they just hit home run after home run, like Giancarlo. Dude, he hit, what, like 478-foot homer, like 2 days in a row? That's fun to watch, and there's a lot of guys who are doing that. But at the same time, there are a lot of bad teams out there that they just look pitiful. And you almost feel embarrassed for them to watch. Like, oh, you're in the majors the way that you're playing? Like, ugh, yikes.
Mm-hmm. Sean, do you think any of this is being... excuse me. Do you think any of this is being fanned by fantasy?
It could possibly.
Are players out there working just for their stats as Pete Rose indicates here? You think I
wouldn't like to say that players are playing to promote themselves as a fantasy player. I'd still like to believe that there's a lot of guys out there who are playing the game to win, like Rose is saying. I think there's hopefully a lot of guys out there who play for the love of the game and for that final win instead of playing for a paycheck and playing to boost their stats. But I think there is, you know, with how the fantasy leagues work and all that kind of stuff, I think there is, you know, almost somewhat of a pressure on players to perform because there's fans going into this expecting you to perform, so they're going to put you on their fantasy team. And if you're not doing well, then they'll cut you from your fantasy team. I mean, people probably aren't even paying that much to teams anymore as much as they are their fantasy players. Like, that's why I've never been a personal fan of doing fantasy leagues, because again, the Phillies aren't doing well, but I still have to root for them. But if I have a player on my fantasy team who's playing against the Phillies, there all of a sudden becomes this contradiction where, am I going to root for the guy I have on my fantasy team, or am I going to root for my home team who I want to win the game?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's not only from the players, but I think it's also from the fans. I mean, I think one of the other things that Pete Rose was hitting on when he was saying that was the fact that the game is good right now could also mean how fans take the game. Because it has been losing some interest over the past couple of years. So I think that could be from the fact that this fantasy is becoming so much more of an importance to people than the actual performance of a team as a whole. you're just picking all these players out, playing like your dream games with your dream players, and not really focusing on what the game is actually there for.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Well, because
Caleb, let me ask you a question though, real quick, and I hate to interrupt you, but as a follow up to what Sean just said, because you did the whole expose on DraftKings and the fact that Major League Baseball is involved in that now and they own a share in that fantasy thing. Inadvertently, could that, in fact, by virtue of the fact that Major League Baseball is involved in that, and we don't know what sort of internal communications are coming from the league to the individual player. We have no idea. And I'm not suggesting that there is. But I'm just saying that just by virtue of the fact that the league is involved in that, does that not place pressure on a player to, if they are a fantasy individual, if they're one of those top guys, does that not place pressure on them that, oh my gosh, I better keep my numbers up?
Yeah, I think it does, especially because you don't, because as a player, you know, you really want to make your home fan base happy with wins. But now there's this added pressure there with, hey, I need to hit a homer. I need to get some RBIs. I need to get on base. I need to do all these things to make random people happy that aren't necessarily your hometown fans. And so it adds a lot of pressure, regardless if any player says it does or not. I think it does subconsciously somehow raise about some sort of pressure in a way that they don't even think about it. They're just like, hey, I need to do good because I just have to. And so I think that just by the virtue, like you said, that they've been a partner now with them for two whole seasons, and now the players – you know, I do kind of wonder how much are they being fed by the commissioner, by his, you know, I don't know what you want to call them, his advisors, his assistants, saying, hey, guys, you need to perform at a certain level because we're going to make some extra cash. We're going to give the teams some extra cash if you do well, whatever that may be. So it is an interesting thing that it has helped out the game in some senses, in that your average fan who isn't necessarily a baseball lover now follows it a little bit more.
Right. Because and it'll bring that younger audience. It'll bring that younger audience in.
Yep.
That I think Sean is insinuating, you know, they've lost, you know, Major League Baseball is losing that younger audience. So
they are.
So, you know, it's a real conundrum. You know, so here's Rose on one hand saying these guys are playing for their stats. They're not playing for the team. Now, here's the, with due respect, here's the major contradiction that I saw in his comments there. While he's saying today guys are playing for their stats, he goes on and says, I was playing for the Big Red Machine where we played as a team. We played as a team, and I would come into the clubhouse, and that guy over there was the home run leader, and that guy over there was the steals leader, and that guy over there was the this leader, and I was the hits leader. Well, wait a minute. He seemed to know everybody's stats. Isn't that a bit
interesting, I mean, with his gambling issue? I wonder.
No, yeah, but not just that. It's like, well, wait a minute. Aren't those all individual? Are they individual?
Yeah.
Or are they team? See, because he's pointing them out as I was,
not
but we're
were
a team. Exactly, not we were.
Yep.
Right.
If he had said somebody was the leader, yes, but then he said we were the NL leaders or the major league leaders in this category or this, then, you know, and kind of mixed it up, then, all right, I can see where that's not a focusing on a personal level. You know, that does make sense, but he's focused on every individual person. You were the leader in this. He was that. I was this. So
right, exactly. And that's where I found the biggest contradiction in what he had to say, was that while he was, in some respects, castigating the folks that are out there that are, oh, well, they're only playing for their own individual stats, he's sitting there nonetheless and citing, oh, this one was the stats leader in that, and this guy on my team was the stats leader in that, and it, boom, 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 and he's running them down. Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, let me play one more clip here because I know this one's going to make Caleb very happy. This one is not from the first week. This is actually from this past week where Pete Rose is on with Chris Myers. And, well, I want you to remember something for a moment. Pete Rose is 74 years old, okay? Now, a lot of people have indicated that Pete Rose simply wants to get reinstated so that he has an opportunity to get into the Hall of Fame. Others have contended he wants to get reinstated so that he could get back to coaching or potentially managing. Now, I want to ask you a question in this clip that you hear here. Does this guy sound like a hitting coach? Because I got to tell you something. Wow. Wait till you hear this bit of advice. And this is to Andrew McCutchen.
Pete, it was about a week ago when you reached out a phone number and Andrew McCutchen returned the phone call. Yeah. And he has gone in that nine hits over that six-game span, including ending a 26-game homerless string. What exactly did you tell Andrew McCutchen?
Well, first of all, I told him he's the best player in the league. Okay, and second, I told him, don't worry about what's happened so far. It's behind you. Worry about starting out tonight and start your season tonight. Relax. Have fun, which you seem to do. He's great in the community. He got rid of his dreadlocks. That's not why he was in a slump. He got married. That's not why he's in a slump. He just wasn't swinging good. Now, all of a sudden, you become more aggressive. Someone from the outside give you some information. Nothing new. Just be out there and be aggressive and have fun.
I'll bet he appreciated. You'd never met him, but you reached out and offered your phone number. It was nice.
Well, it was great that he called me back.
Yeah,
it really was. All I want to do is help him because I really like him. I really think he's a great player.
Right. What are all-time hits leader? What are keys to ending a slump?
I remember one time about 4 or 5 years ago, my son was still playing. He called me one day and he said, Dad, I'm 0 for 22. Can you help me? I said, what the hell are you calling me for? I said, call Concepcion. I never went 0 for 22.
Dave Concepcion, the shortstop who never hit like me. That's real nice. You throw an old teammate under the bus. Pete Rose Jr., your
son. You can go into a slump with one at bat. You can get out of a slump with one at bat.
You get out of one at bat.
Oh, I think so. Because what used to drive me crazy, if you hit off of a screwball pitcher or a knuckleball pitcher, because they get you lunging. And once you get lunging on their front foot, you have a tendency to make a lot of outs.
What's the most unusual?
Twilight games get you in lunching because you don't see the ball good.
Do you have any unusual or weird?
All right. So my question I throw out to you, gentlemen, and I believe both of you have played baseball. I have not played organized baseball, but I believe both of you have. Does that guy sound like he wants to be a manager or a hitting coach?
I feel like he does. I feel like he obviously has the intelligence, the attributes to do so, in that he knows what he's talking about because he's the major league hit leader of all time. He knows how to hit the baseball, so why would you not want the best one to try to tell you, hey, you need to change this, you need to do this? Yeah, I would want Rose to help me out. If I was a major leaguer, I don't care if I was already leading the league in hits, home runs, or whatever he could say, hey, try to change this or that, I would do it without even asking why, because he knows what he's saying. And so I feel like just by that little clip there that he wants to try to help some people out because he's got all that knowledge up in his head on how to hit, on how to do things successfully, and he wants to try to impart that into the younger generation. And I think that's amazing. And, yeah, I would love him if he were to be the hitting coach for the Pirates. I would love it. Even though he was a Red. Yeah, all right, but now with him would come a lot of publicity and things like that, but I promise you this, we would hit the ball better. I know it. because he just has a relatability to him and the personability to him to make the guys feel really comfortable and to just say, hey, shake it off, go and get them again. I mean, and he had even said it. It takes one at bat to just get out of it. And I believe that because I've had some times where, I mean, I went on a long, you know, 0 for 15, whatever, that I just couldn't hit it. And then I just got one little hit, and I was like, all right, I got the confidence, and I can do it now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a matter of the confidence and stuff.
It's mental. It's mental.
It is. This game is probably the most mental game out of anything because you play 162 games. You've got to shake off. You are going to make an error. You're going to get out, but you're also going to hit some homers. And you just have to keep a level head and shake it off no matter what. You just got to shake it off. And so that's why I would think that Rose would do really well, even with his age at 74.
Sean, you were behind the plate. I mean, I guess it would be a dream come true to have somebody like a Pete Rose helping you out as a hitting coach, huh?
Oh, it certainly would. I mean, I know from my experience playing baseball, being in a slump is never a very great thing. I know while I was growing up, I've never been one of the biggest guys out on the field. I wasn't a guy who was going to hit a ball to the outfield every single time. So when I was a lot younger, I would hit a ball up the third baseline and then beat out a third of first base. But then as the time went on, I didn't develop any more strength while the third basemen were getting a lot more arm strength and I kept getting thrown out at first base. So all of a sudden I was in this situation where, well, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
And it was a matter of one of my coaches, as well as my dad, who was a coach at the time, telling me that it was maybe time to switch something up because I would always hit leadoff. So you want your leadoff guy to get on base. Well, it turns out all I needed to do was, start bunting because I started to become an excellent bunter to the point where I could bunt for singles at the beginning of games. And then that would mix up the defense to where, hey, is this kid going to lay down another bunt? And I could confuse the defense a little bit. But it's definitely that coaching aspect of things where if you have a coach who absolutely knows what's going on and how to fix it, like, you're going to have a great time. Just like, Rose getting in touch with McCutchen, telling him, hey, like, you got to put all this in the past. That's the last game. You got to focus on the next game. Do what you need to do. Clear your mind. Change up what you need to change up. And just start fresh every single game.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
And I also think, too, that this is definitely Rose trying to pass on his knowledge to the MLB right now. And I think it's also kind of another one of those tiny little stabs at the MLB for banning him from the game indefinitely. Because I think if he was allowed back into the game, he could definitely become a hitting coach or something for a team and be able to put the knowledge that he has into these younger players to be able to make some great hitters.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. And I that's why I wanted to get the perspective. And I'm sure that if you were, I know you were on that team with Nick, and Nick probably said to you when you got into those slumps, can I tell you, I probably know what he said. What did he say, Sean?
It's early.
Exactly. That's exactly what he said. That's exactly what he said. All right. Now, what we got to do before we wrap things up here, because we got just a couple of minutes, is we got to get to our weekly series streak challenge where each one of us on the panel picks a team that's upcoming and who we think will win that particular series upcoming. And right now, here's where the standings are. Nick is 4-2. Sean, you are 3-3. I'm 2-4. Caleb, you're 1-5. Caleb, I would say to you, don't worry about it. It's early.
It's early.
That's
all right.
Exactly
it's all
right.
Right.
Exactly right. Now, I will bring real quick to you here. This was Nick's pick for this week. Nick is picking the Mariners. Of course he is. I told him I will pick for him next week. Of course, Nick is picking the Mariners over the Blue Jays. Caleb, what do you got for us for this week?
Well, I'm going to go with the Tigers over the Houston Astros this weekend. Hopefully I can make it up to 2-5.
Over the Astros, I will tell you, I think I was looking at that one as well. I believe that's a four-game series. Sean, I think, I'm not sure, but I think that's a four-game series. Sean, where are you going?
I'm still going to take it.
All right, I got you. Go ahead. Sean, where are you going?
I'm going to take the Pirates over the Mets this weekend.
Uh-oh. Oh, how did you miss that one, Caleb?
I wasn't trying to be a homer, so because they got me in the past.
Well, I was just past twice already.
I picked them twice, and they have lost both.
I was thinking about this last week. This past week, I had that feeling in my stomach again that the Phillies were going to take the series, but I went against my gut, and of course they swept this weekend.
I did too. I ended up losing
because the Sox swept the A's.
Listen, don't worry about being a homer, because if I didn't know better, I would think that Nick actually lives in Seattle. But anyhow, at this point, I'm going to pick the Royals over the Cardinals. Ah, there's a good series. Royals and Cardinals. I'm picking the Royals over the Cardinals. You can find all of those picks, folks, probably within the next 30, 45 minutes. You'll find them over on our Frat House Sports Facebook page. Get over there and give us a like over there. Look, leave spaces in between Frat House Sports. Look for our little purple icon. Give us a like. Gentlemen, what a lot of fun this program has been tonight. And boy, unfortunately, it's not early. It's late now. We only have about a minute left, and I got to wrap things up. Many thanks to you guys. Many thanks to Rick on deck, who called in with us as well. And many thanks to all of you that have listened in this evening. Please make sure you're here with us on Thursday night for our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show, coming to you 193rd in a row. Holy smokes. We only got 7 more to 200. I guess we'll set off a firecracker or something. But, we'll be here for that one on Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Please make sure you're here with us for that one. Until next week, when we are back here with you, it will be Sean and Nick here. Or no, who will it be? I don't even remember. It's going to be Caleb and Nick, I believe. Next week, we'll be here with me here on the Cleanup Hitters program. Thank you all. Enjoy your baseball.